This recording is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. The Institute was founded in 1988. The website was posted soon after the Institute was founded, thereby making it one of the earliest in the development of the internet. The primary purpose of the website is to promote the system of divine metaphysics, which is provided to us by Mary Baker Eddy in her landmark textbook entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She discovered Christian Science as a result of reading the Bible to recover from what was prognosed as a fatal fall on the ice. She had been an avid student of the Bible since early childhood. Christian Science is the only known religion that meets the requirements of what Einstein stated. About 80 years after she discovered Christian Science, and about 80 years prior to today. These quotes are on the website, but essentially, two points are directly related to what Christian Science is all about and the system of divine metaphysics. He said, "Religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame." Christian Science, as the name indicates, is exactly a combination of science and religion. The religion is the religion of Christianity, the finest religion there is, because it is the only one that has been able to provide healings. If we're not going to be able to gain healings from our daily life, what good is the religion? Is it just a religion built on some kind of hope? Christian Science puts that to rest, because Mary Baker Eddy discovered the science of how Jesus performed his healings. They were not miracles, they were a very specific science. The textbook of Christian Science, which is 700 pages, includes 101 pages in the back, which give details on 486 healings. These are verified from 85 different testifiers, and they have been published in the Christian Science periodicals between the years of 1883 and 1910, which was the last year Mary Baker Eddy was visible on Earth. The textbook has been reprinted on a regular basis over those years, and there has not been any record of anyone that has challenged any of those healings being accurate. Because of the healings, churches sprang up all over the world, and these are independent. It wasn't arranged by the executive branch, the bureaucracy of the Mother Church of Christian Science, but they were independently handled by the various people that lived in the countries all over the world because of the news that had traveled about the healing that comes about as a result of sincere study and spiritual advancement of oneself by the study of the textbook. Mary Baker Eddy stated that Jesus was the most perfect man that ever trod the globe. In addition to recognizing and accepting him as the Son of God, as well as the Son of Man, she also has specified him to be the way-shower. And anyone who is an avid student of Christian Science will realize that that is a very definite acknowledgement of how he is revered by students of Christian Science. The Bible prophesies the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, when it refers to a little book. Jesus also prophesied, Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science, by stating that he will send a comforter. Prophecy in Isaiah also supports her appearance on earth. Jesus was also prophesied in the Old Testament, and so was the President of the United States, for he is here for a very specific reason. There have been a number of people that have said that they do not approve of the morals of the president, but of course they obviously are not perfect themselves, or they would have ascended. There is no one that has been in human form that has not made many mistakes. How many of the 12 disciples that Jesus chose even showed up at the trial? None. How many showed up at the crucifixion? One. John. And even he had problems, because when Jesus appointed him and James and Peter to watch while he went on up the mountain, he came back and they had all fallen asleep. But John did bail himself out, and he proved that he was really transformed by surviving being put into a pot of boiling oil. And of course he was exiled to the island of Patmos, where he was involved in the book of Revelation. But Jesus knew how advanced he was by that time, and he came back after he ascended to meet with John on the island of Patmos to dictate the major part of Revelation. Not only did Einstein make those comments about science and religion, but he became a thorough student of the writings of Mary Baker Eddy and what she discovered, entitled Christian Science. And he visited the local reading room on a regular basis, and he also attended the local church. And he made these comments. Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book. Even capitalized the word thou. She obviously did not want credit. She was extremely humble, and she said that she was a scribe unto the orders of God, who dictated the textbook to her. And she published as the first edition in 1875. And that was also after she had tested what she believed to be the truth for several years, and proved that the healing came as a result of her understanding of what is in the textbook. It was noted that Christian Science is a religion of healing. There's a quote that was just published recently, and it says, "The fearful seek to serve themselves by mastering the world, while the fearless seek to serve the world by mastering themselves." And that's exactly what Christian Science is all about. It is serving all humanity while mastering themselves. And what does that mean, by mastering oneself? It means overcoming the belief that we were born a sinner. Overcoming the belief that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Overcoming the belief that our mind is mortal. Overcoming anything to have power that is unlike God. If it's unlike God, who is absolutely perfect, omnipresent, omnipotent, all action, in fact, anything to do with mental, is from the mind of God. All substance is spirit, which is the only substance in all existence. Soul is spiritual sense. That means the seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. Those all have a spiritual nature. Principle means structure. It also means everything is perfectly balanced and harmonious. Life is living the qualities of God, which are what we're discussing right now. Truth is staying on track. It's having a pure motive and carrying out that motive with all thought, speech, and action. Love is a combination of everything that's already been said. In other words, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. Think of a mother. A mother nurtures her children. Christian Science is nurturing all of the qualities to get a better spiritual understanding of them and to use them in our daily life. Think of a matrix or a spreadsheet that has 7 columns and 7 rows. Put mind in the very left top and go across with spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. That's the top row from left to right. And from top to bottom in the far left column, add to mind, which is in the first slot, the first row, and add the other 6, which are exactly in the same order as the row. So you would, on row 2, you would have spirit, row 3, soul, and so forth, up to row 7 would be love. Think about mind. Mind has anything to do with the mental. Is intelligence mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, or love? Well, it's all of them. But it stands by itself with unique qualities. So we consider it number 1 in development. Because if you look at Genesis chapter 1, it's divided into 7 days. And the very first day is enlightenment, and that is mind. And the second day is focused on substance, and that is spirit. And the third day is focused on the senses, that is soul. And the fourth day on principle, the fifth day on life, 6th on truth, and the 7th on love. When it says, and everything was complete, and it was all very good. That's love. Love is completion. Now, the reason I referred you to a matrix, think about intelligence just as one of the many qualities of mind. You have to use the intelligence of mind for all the other 5, 6, well, let's say 5, and therefore it's automatically included in the 6th one, the 6th other one, which is a 7 total. You cannot determine if the substance of anything that you want to think about is of spirit or matter unless you use intelligence of mind. The same thing about your senses. If you're looking at something, you can't really tell whether it is spiritual or material unless you use intelligence. How about principle? Can you formulate in thought any kind of a good permanent structure unless you're using intelligence? No. About life. Can you live a life that follows the way-shower, Christ Jesus, or Mary Baker Eddy, or anyone else that has been an expert in Christian Science on healing, without utilizing intelligence? No. Everything we do, we use intelligence. And if we're using the spiritual intelligence of God, then we won't make mistakes. So we're always striving for that perfection with every quality that we emulate that is a symbol that God is the source. How about truth? Can you tell the difference between truth and error? In other words, a mistake or perfection without intelligence? Nope. How about love? Would you know how to really live a life of spiritual love, which is the only love that comes from God? Certainly emotional love doesn't come from God. Could you really distinguish the difference in the type of love that you're thinking about without intelligence? No. So you see, mind plays a part, and that's only one of 50 or more words that Mary Baker Eddy uses to describe mind. If you don't utilize the qualities of mind, you can't fulfill living the other qualities. And the same thing with all of the other qualities regarding mind itself. If mind is not of the substance of spirit, it's not going to be accurate in its intelligence. If it's not going to know how to identify things, which is soul, that's the senses, that's how we identify things with our seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. We would not be able to accurately identify anything if we didn't have the sense of spirit, which is the substance, when we're identifying things, when we're looking at things, when we're listening to things. And if you want to advance in your spiritual nature by bringing it forth, because it's already within, God finished his work. You're not new. Whatever date you think you were born, whatever day, minute, hour, it means nothing. Because the Bible says there is nothing new under the sun. You're not new. Your birthday means nothing. You have always existed as a spiritual idea of God. What does verse 26 say and 27 of Genesis chapter 1? 26 says, "And God said, let us make man in our image and likeness." And how about 27? It says, "And so God made man in his image and after his likeness." And then it says, "God gave man dominion over all the earth, and everything above the earth and under the earth, everything in all the waters, everything." Now, how could we have dominion of anything if we didn't have the ability to reflect the intelligence of God? We know nothing. Everything, all knowing, is from God, divine mind. On page 465, Mary Baker Eddy gives us this definition of God: incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And on page 587, she gives us another definition, which emphasizes a few different terms for God. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. So she uses the seven same synonymous terms for God, because those are the only synonymous terms for God. But then each one has 50 or more words to describe that particular word, that particular one of the seven synonymous terms. So, all in all, there's probably somewhere around 400 words that explain exactly what those seven words mean. I gave you one for mind, which was intelligence. Spirit is the only substance, and it is flawless. It is the opposite of matter. She uses words that define the seven synonymous terms, and also words that are the opposites. Matter is the opposite of spirit. Mortal mind is the opposite of divine mind. Death is the opposite of life. Chaos is the opposite of principle, which is structure, harmony, and balance. Truth is the opposite of error, mistakes, fallacies. Hate is the opposite of love. If we do not exercise perfect spiritual love, then we're exercising something that is the opposite, which is hate. Anything that is not absolutely pure, 100% love, spiritual love, is on the other side of the desk. The line cannot be moved. The difference between love and hate can't be diluted. It's one or the other. Black or white? White represents all colors. Black represents the absence of all color. It's like being in a dark room or being in a room that is light. Being in the sun or being hidden underground or somewhere where there's no possibility of any light being in that place whatsoever. And the beauty is we have a choice of where we are, because where we are is within consciousness. Mary Baker Eddy gives us three introductory quotes at the very beginning of the textbook. The first one is from Jesus, quoted by John. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The second one is from Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third quote is from Mary Baker Eddy. It says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Are we devoting our life to seeking the truth and living it? And we know it has to be spiritual. It has to be intelligent. It has to be able to be identified. It has to be able to be lived. It has to be able to be measured of whether it's really truth or error. And it has to be with the atmosphere of love, not hate. Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment of all? His answer, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. They can't be separated. They are all one, as a united prayer that covers everything. the Golden Rule, that's what Christian Science is. One of the greatest geniuses of Christian Science, his name is Frederick L. Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. We have his writings on our website, and all the quotes that are provided are on the website. In fact, most of them are on the home page. The greatest commandment: love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Can you hate your neighbor and love God? Can you hate anyone about anything, for any reason, anywhere, and love God? The Bible says we cannot love the invisible unless we love the visible. What is the visible? The visible is the manifestation of the invisible. God is invisible. A Pharisee asked Jesus, he said, "Good Master, how can I obtain eternal life?" He was a Pharisee who was a tax collector. He's very wealthy. He could buy anything he wanted, and he probably had anything that he had a desire for. Anything, you name it. What do you think Jesus said as a reply? Can you think of any problems that the Pharisee may have had? Number one, he was a tax collector. Number two, he was wealthy. Number three, he wanted something more than what he could buy. He wanted eternal life. Do you see any kind of a conflict there? I read something recently, and it said, when you pass on, and we call it going around the corner here at the Institute, where you become invisible, but you're still alive, and we know that because the Bible tells us there's nothing new under the sun. We have always existed as a child of God. We have always existed as an image of the one and only source. And that one and only source is the source of everything you can see and everything you cannot see that is good. I don't care how strong of a microscope or a telescope, depending on whether you're looking at something that's close by, or maybe on your desk, or in your hand, or a ring on a finger, you wouldn't use a microscope, you'd use an eyeglass, but, or whether you're looking up in the sky with a telescope. Everything in existence has always been in existence. There is nothing new under the sun. That's before the sun is a part of the creation in Genesis chapter 1. Or before the moon or the stars or anything. Enlightenment is the first step. That is a symbol for turning on the light within our own consciousness. It's always been there. But is the switch on? I had a friend that was very comical. And if she was talking to someone and they didn't understand her, she would say, and she wouldn't say this to them directly, but she said it to me on a couple of occasions. We were good friends. And she said, "The lights are on, but no one's home." In other words, they were there, and she was talking to them because they were alive, but they weren't thinking. They weren't being consciously aware of what she was saying. So the lights were on, but no one was home. They are at home, but the lights are not on. Either one. The idea is that we have to be home. In other words, that's our consciousness. And we have to have the lights on. Or we cannot understand anything, because all understanding comes from God. God is omniscient. Omniscience means omni-intelligent, omni-knowing, and omni-wisdom. Do you want to make plans on some great idea that has come to you? Where do you think you ought to start? What's the very first thing you think you ought to do? Remember what I said about the definition of God, including omniscience, and omniscience including all knowing, all wisdom, all intelligence. God also, through the function of mind, is omni-creative. All creative force is from God. All faculty, all facility, all functionality, all facility, all performance, and I already mentioned all power, and he's omnipresent, or it, not really a biological gender. That's just the way they used to talk. Always he. Like it's common if you have a boat, they call him a she. You know, I'm going down and cleaner, or painter, service the engine or whatever. They referred to a boat as a she. They referred to men, they referred to a human as a man. It doesn't refer to a woman in Genesis chapter 1. It says, and God created man in his image and likeness. Man means all mankind. And what is mankind? Mankind is a limited view of who you and I are. We're not really mankind. We are a spiritual image. That's the reason Jesus made so many mistakes in choosing his disciples. He was choosing people that were human. People that criticized the president, saying that he's not perfect. Have you ever thought about King David? He saved their nation by slaying Goliath. What did he do after he became king? What did he do? About the worst evil anybody can do. He was looking out from his castle with his binoculars about the people that were down below, looking all around. And his eyes feasted upon this beautiful woman. What did he do? He asked one of his assistants who she was. And they found out. They told him, sorry, king, she's married. She's not available to be one of your wives. He said, no problem. Put the husband in the next war we have and put him on the front lines. Everybody on the front lines, that was the end. And that's exactly what happened. He got killed in the war. And then he took the wife. Now, is that about as evil as anyone could be? He did this great thing by slewing Goliath, who were controlling everyone around, you know, the Philistines. And then when he got where he could have really done some good, he did this terrible thing. He was a messenger of God, but that was not a God action that he was taking. It was a human action. Lust. Sensuality. On page 115 and 116, Mary Baker Eddy describes the four levels of consciousness. The system of divine metaphysics, very much like mathematics. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 through 9. It has four operators at the basic level, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And it has several levels of understanding, advancement. The system of divine metaphysics has 7 elements, comparable to the 10 digits. And I've mentioned them twice. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Those are the elements. They're tantamount to the 10 digits. And the add, subtract, multiply, and divide are called the operators. In the system of divine metaphysics, the operators are also described in the Bible. Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The whole Bible is considered the Word. And what is the purpose of the Bible? It does a lot of other things, some of which are very evil, but it basically includes, if you know where to look and how to read it, it includes the facts about God. That's what the Word is, the facts about God. And what is the Christ? Why is Jesus called the Christ? Now, the proper way to address Jesus is not Jesus Christ, but Christ Jesus. Just like if you have a professor, you call him Professor such and such. Or a doctor, you know, it's like a surname. It's like doctor, whatever his name is. And that can be any kind of a doctor. It can be a guy with a PhD and mathematics. And he's still called the same thing as a doctor of, you know, medicine. Or a doctor of anything. Just like professor. Or like mister. It's a title. Mr. Mrs. Miss. Miss, Mr. Mrs. They're all titles. They go in front of the name. Christ is a title. Jesus is not Christ. God is Christ, because Christ is the interpreter. Christ is what enables one to convert what they see with their eyes to the invisible, which is the perfect God. Jesus was able to see every one as a perfect child of God. If he saw Lazarus as a dead human, he could not have raised him from the dead. Or Tabitha. Or the blind man. And what did Jesus say about the blind man? They asked him, who did sin, this man or his parents? He had been blind from birth. And what was the answer of Jesus? Neither did this man sin, nor his parents. And they said, well, why are we here? Jesus says to glorify God. And how did he glorify God? By overcoming the belief that he was blind. How did he overcome the belief that he was blind? By knowing his true nature that it states in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. In fact, I believe that's one of them that he asked, do you believe, do you have faith that you can be healed? And he said, yes. There has to be an open thought. Genesis 1, verse 26 says, and let us make man in our image and likeness. Jesus did it. What did Jesus say in front of Lazarus and Tabitha? I think he said the same thing to both of them. that they sleepeth, and he's there to awaken them. Awaken them out of the dream that life can be followed by death. Jesus didn't believe that. Jesus knew that they were always alive, and he was going to prove it. Why do you think Jesus submitted to the crucifixion? You must realize that he had power to disappear. He had disappeared before when he was in an aggressive group that were trying to attack him. He walked through the crowd, and they couldn't see him. And he escaped. He could have done that instead of going through the trial and going through the crucifixion. He had a very specific reason to do what he did. He had to show that if he was going to take a human standpoint, he was going to suffer like just anyone else. That's one thing that he needed to prove. That's why he didn't want to take any of that painkiller when they offered it to him. No. I want people to know that if you're going to follow a human life, you're going to suffer. You cut yourself, you're going to say, ouch. What's the second reason? How long did he stay down? He told him before he was crucified how long it would be. He said they will try to kill the Son of Man. He didn't say he was the Son of God. He said the Son of Man. The Son of God is perfect and spiritual. The Son of Man was a human. He said they will try to kill the Son of Man and he will be raised up in 3 days. In other words, he will show that you can overcome the belief of being made of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. And he did it. One of the Christian Scientists, Bicknell Young. In fact, he was, I don't know whether it was a nephew or a brother or something of Joseph Young that started the Mormon Church, is one of the close bloodline relatives to the one that founded it, and he left it and became a Christian Scientist. He had drowned. He was out at the beach with friends, and he drowned. While they were lamenting his death, they had taken him out of the water, and he was up on the beach, and he was pronounced dead, and he saw them having the discussion, looking at his body. He wasn't in his body. He wasn't dead. He was active, having a conversation with himself. And he asked himself, should I go on, or is there more that I should be doing on earth? He had been recognized as one of the best teachers, one of the best students. People came to him for all kinds of problems. Several came to him to solve their business problems. He found they didn't know anything about running their business. So he sent them away. He said, you've got to learn everything you can in a human way about your business. And then if you have problems, and you can use Christian Science to have ideas revealed to you on how to learn what you need to learn and so forth. I mean, that's, Christian Science is a science to live. Live every thought, speech, and action in our life. Everything we do, we want to make sure it aligns with the seven synonymous terms for God and all their functions. So he sent them away. You have to learn. in a human way before you can get into the divine. Mary Baker Eddy made the statement about Jesus that his divinity was possible only as a result of his excelling in humanity. No matter what the situation was, he excelled in translating the visible, relating them to what they were as an image and likeness of God, as it states in Genesis. Only then could he heal them. He had to see them as they really were. Anyone that has a wonderful project, has a thought that comes to them, how they can serve mankind. And this is what the title is all about. They have to think about where they want to be. What is the goal? What do you want to accomplish? And when they get that settled in their mind, then they reverse engineer it. Okay, this is where I want to be. This is the end result that I'm looking for. And then they have to go back and see, well, okay, let's build a blueprint. How do we get there? Now, reverse engineering can be taken both in a spiritual way and a very materialistic way. People that have strong biases, they use it to try to justify their ego, their preconceived notion. And of course, they will fail eventually because it's all based on the theory that life, truth, and intelligence is in matter instead of spirit. The president who wrote the book, The Art of the Deal, and he's a billionaire by his own right. And he said if he would have thought about how much money he was going to make on the project, he's absolutely convinced it would be a failure. And that's exactly why he titled the book, The Art of the Deal. He said you need to be motivated by having everything work together. Not how much money you're going to make. Anyone that has been successful knows that if you do things right, the financial end of it comes to maturity. But if you focus on the end from terms of profit, then you blind yourself to everything else that needs to be done. The best long-term investments and the methods to make a success out of them is just like it says in Isaiah. Precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. And here's the key. Here a little and there a little. Greed has nothing to do with success. It's a guaranteed way to fail. Guaranteed. If you've ever invested in any market where you could both sell first and buy it back later to cover, to close out the transaction, or you can buy first and, of course, sell later, but you have to be able to do it both ways in order to understand what I'm talking about. And that is, it's the old adage, bulls expect the market to go up, so they buy. And then they sell to take their profit. A bear is one that thinks the market is going to go down, so they will sell first and then buy back. And they have these tools so you can do it with many different kinds of markets. You can do it with the stock market, the commodity market, a variety of different things you can do, but you can do it either way. So they say bulls make money, bears make money, but pigs lose it all. That's greed. You see, when you are greedy, you are not seeing any real perspective about the facts. You're blind to them. It's true about anything in life. When the children of Israel were out in the desert and they were starving, they supposedly talked to God, and he said, I will give you all you need to eat, but don't store it up. Only take what you need for right now. And the idea was to learn to trust God to provide what you need when you need it. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But the story goes that they didn't do it. And if you think about it yourself, you might go shopping and they have a sale on something that you use all the time, and you may overbuy. And then you end up, if it's something perishable, you end up losing part of it, because it's wasted. You bought more than what you could use while it still had a good shelf life. So we need to think about the end and then reverse engineer it to figure out how we're going to get there. Remembering that God is all-knowing, and we have to know the principle about everything we're doing, every piece of it, every part of it. We have to learn the principle about everything we're doing, and we should try to excel to perfection in everything we do. There's three movies that are recommended along this line. One is called Remember the Goal. Another one is called Pay It Forward. And another one is called Stand and Deliver. Now, the first two are made by a Christian organization, and there's no profanity at all. The third one is about a rough neighborhood in East LA, which is dominated by Mexicans, and they're struggling to survive, and their language is not what it should be. But if you overlook the language at the beginning of it, and actually their language is is pretty mild. In fact, it's very mild compared to what normal language is today. I mean, they use the worst language possible as a common thing. It's totally absurd. When I went to school, and I was interested in some sports, I was in track. That's running, jumping, you know, well, you probably know what it is. But, you know, you pole vault, high jump, you run, you jump over hurdles while you're running, a variety of things that is called field, track and field. And the coach, on the very first day of class, I guess I was a freshman, ninth grade, and he said, there's no foul language in the locker room or anywhere else. He said, the first time I hear it, I will send you to English class. You have to take the class. You know, that's like a whole, I don't know, 9 months. We didn't have semesters. It was just, we had a break around Christmas time, but otherwise, you know, it was a 9-month class. He said, the second time I hear it, you're going to be dismissed from school for a day. And if I hear it a third time, you're going to be suspended for the year. You'll have to take this class over. There was no swearing. Of course, I grew up in a family where there was no profanity ever. But that was really the way he approached it. When a civilization goes downhill, it's engineered. It's engineered by those who are in control to degrade individuals in groups. In other words, they will do it in the schools. They'll do it with entertainment. They'll do it with books. By entertainment, you know, we've got a lot of different avenues of that now. You know, movies, songs, the lyrics. I mean, there's no melody in music these days. So they've removed the melody. They have the worst language you can imagine. And they deal with this in every aspect of your life. Everything. And anyone that is born and has this exposure from the beginning, they don't see anything wrong with it because it's been normalized. And it's a way to degrade society. And of course, the key is to have control of people is to give them lots of entertainment. And that's what they do. But they are mind controlling everyone that is involved. So we have to reverse engineer. And we have to realize, first of all, that in order to have a life of spiritual progress, we should take a careful study of those who are perfect examples. And there's no human that is a perfect example, but there are some that are very divine. So we take the best of the best, and that's our model. So the three movies, the one is about running, and that's Remember the Goal. And the second one, Pay It Forward, that's about what I just mentioned, giving. You give now, and when you give it to someone, whatever it is, whatever way you help them in the way they need it. And whatever way you help them, it has to be on them promising to help three other people. And you're going to help three people, but you tell that to each one. So you're going to help three, and those three are going to help three. So they're going to do nine, you know, because there's three of them. You're going to do three, and each one of those three are going to do three. And then each one of those three that are helped are going to do three. So it's a geometric progression. Pay it forward. You don't even think about ever getting anything back. I mean, if you do it with the intent of expecting to get something out of it, that is not giving. That is not giving at all. You have to totally give up ego. And if you think about Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy and three others that you can study about their bios that had 15-minute appointments, and by the end of 15 minutes, the patient was healed. No matter what it was. Wentworth Winslow is one of the three that had 15-minute appointments. He raised a boy from the dead. And I already told you about Bicknell Young. He raised himself from the dead. And Joel Goldsmith, was called into the Christian Science nursing home, and the lady had a problem, and she asked him to come over. And he entered the reception area. They had 200 or 300 people there in the building. And she says, "You can't go in there." She said, "Everyone has the same problem, and it's contagious." He said, "How many people do you have here?" So however many it was, he said, "You probably think you have this many problems, don't you?" She said, "Yeah, I know we do." He said, "You only have one problem." They had a problem with one particular illness, and everybody had submitted to it. They may have submitted involuntarily. Maybe they were watching TV, and it was announced by the news that this was an epidemic in the area or worldwide or whatever it was. But he said, "You only have one problem." So she said, "You can't go in there anyway." He says, "You go in there, you're going to come back with the same problem." So he went over and sat down in a quiet area in the reception area. And in a few minutes, they all started coming out, the nurses. And they said, "What happened?" "Everybody's healed, all at the same time." He didn't see that they had a disease. He saw them as being an image and likeness of God. Mary Baker Eddy defines man on page 591 as a compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Now, is there anything in there that says he's subject to sin, sickness, disease, or death? Does Genesis chapter 1 say that God made man, but oops, there's a problem. He's subject to sin, disease, sickness, death, conflict, discord of all kinds, chaos? No. And everything that Mary Baker Eddy states can be verified in the Bible. When she defined God as being mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, you can do a search on the internet. In fact, we have the links. In fact, we have the links right on the homepage of the website. I don't know when you'll listen to this, whether you'll listen to it while we have the homepage the same way or not. We change it all the time. But it's in the menu also. And so we give you the link for each one of those seven terms for God of all the Bible verses that support what Mary Baker Eddy says. When Mary Baker Eddy says that God is mind, we give you a link that you can click and you can read every Bible verse in the Bible that refers to it. And the same with the other six. There are just hundreds and hundreds of words, phrases, verses that support her definition of God. And we provide it to you. We make it easy for you. You can just click on it and every single verse is there. And you can click on the verse and it expands. So you can read a larger portion of the text before and after. Mary Baker Eddy says we are barraged constantly with a temptation to believe that we are not what it states in Genesis chapter 1, but we're what it states in Genesis chapter 2. And people totally skip over the fact that in Genesis chapter 2, the very first thing it says is that there went up a mist. Can you see clearly in a mist? No. The first thing that happens in Genesis chapter 1 is there was light. You turn on the light. In Genesis chapter 2, you turn on the rain. So if you want to find out a clear view of what man is, you're not going to get it from reading the story of Adam and Eve. If you follow that, you'll think you're born a sinner. Jesus never talked about anyone being born a sinner. He separated the individual from the action that they did. Someone else can come along and do the same thing. If you want to kill the messenger, that's what someone is that is sinning, or sick, or diseased, chaotic, whatever the problem is. You need to separate it. Because if you don't separate, you'll never be able to get rid of the problem. Sin, sickness, disease, and death is absolutely without power unless it is attached to something or someone. It has to be related. There has to be an object. It tries to be the subject, and there has to be an object. If you take away the object, it has nowhere to go but away. The best way to heal something is to focus on the solution, not on the problem. Einstein says you cannot solve a problem on the same level as where you first noticed the problem. You can't do it. I mentioned about there being four levels on pages 115 and 116. Mary Beck Reddy presents the top level, which is the absolute first. And therefore, she talks about God, the idea of God, and man, which is the expression of the idea. Remember in the definition of man, I said that man is a compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Okay, that's the highest level. And then she gives you the lowest level, which is depravity. And then one above that, which is moral. And one above that, which is spiritual. And the only thing above the spiritual is the absolute, which is spirit itself, which is God. So when you're reading anything that is from Mary Baker Eddy's writings, you have to first of all determine what level is this message on. Because you cannot understand what's said unless you classify it by the level. And after you do that, then you can tear it apart and learn it. And we tell you how to heal. We tell you how to learn to heal anything. Anything. If you think that it's not effective, read the last 101 pages in the textbook. It's a 700-page textbook, so start on page 600 and read through page 700. 486 different healings that are verified by 85 people that were all published between 1883 and 1910, which is Mary Baker Eddy's final edition. So they were all verified, and the book has been reprinted. It's probably the second largest selling book in the world next to the Bible. And it's been reprinted many, many times. But the last final authorized version was finished before she passed, which was December 10, 1910. So you want to make sure if you're reading anything that is not copyrighted, because she purposely did not copyright her book. And you have to make sure it wasn't published after 1910, or if it was, it was based on the 1910 final edition by her. Because other Christian Scientists have published her final edition in, you know, very, very nice bindings and so forth. But you want to make sure you're getting the 1910 edition that was not published after December 10 and is not copyrighted. Because what the church bureaucracy did, as soon as she passed on, they took her picture out of the book. And then they went on a mission to tear down everything that gave her credit. You know, she had statues in her honor all over the northeast of the United States because she started in Boston. And then she lived in New Hampshire, which is where her birthplace was, for many years after she left Boston. Then she came back to Boston to publish the Christian Science Monitor. I think that was 1906 or 1907. So we always want to start at the end. The Bible talks about that. The end is at the beginning. That ought to be a clue. We don't start at the beginning of anything. We have to decide what our goal is. That's the end. And then we work backwards. We reverse engineer it. How can I get there? Do you think the wealthiest man in the world right now didn't already know what he wanted to do with that first rocket that he shot off and he brought it back? It's not the very first one he did, but the first one that he did this to with, engineered it. And then he brought it back and had it land in the launching pad. Instead of it being destroyed, he brought it back so they could reuse it. It's on the internet. You can see the whole event. Well, maybe not the whole event, but you can see the beginning and the end. He knew what he wanted to do, and then he did the blueprint on how to make it happen. That's what we have to do with all of our life, every part of our life. Reverse engineer it. Anything we want to be involved in, we want to strive for perfection. If we don't strive for perfection in everything, then the average will be commonplace for us in other things of our life. If we don't want to excel at it, then we shouldn't do it. Because we're molding a pattern. Mary Baker Eddy says, we are barraged all the time with temptations. And we have to have a model in thought that we can jump to immediately to get any kind of a mediocrity out of our thought. That's why our homepage has a lot of quotes on it about what God is, what man is, the relationship between God and man. We give you one-click links that'll get you to know everything you want to know about any particular one of the synonyms, the operators, and the product. You apply the algorithm to the elements, which are the seven, and you utilize the operators and the algorithm, and you have to know what level you're on. But it's really very simple. And if we apply that to all parts of our life, you will advance beyond what you could ever imagine. Now, if you're happy on your current level of progress, we can't do anything for you. Because you have to come to the point where you realize there's got to be something better. Richard Strain, he was working 18 hours a day, all of it away from home. He'd come home with 6 hours left to eat dinner, shower, whatever he did to prepare for bed, and sleep probably 3 or 4 hours, get up, prepare for the next day, and out the door. And probably eat breakfast before he left. He went to a practitioner. He didn't know what to do. He said, I feel like I'm just going around in circles. I'm working hard, long hours. I'm getting nowhere. She said, when do you study? He was ashamed to answer because he didn't study at all. Zip. None. He did nothing. Well, that's not a way to get ahead. That won't get you anywhere. She said, if you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to solve your problem. She really gave him a problem. He had 6 hours, and he had to get some kind of sleep. If he had to spend 5 hours studying, he'd have 1 hour to do everything. That'd be nothing for sleep. He thought about it, and he said, I've got to change what I'm doing. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but he said, okay, I'll do it. That's all he said was, okay, I'll do it. I'm giving you reading between the lines. Within 1 week, he reported back to the practitioner that, yes, he studied 5 hours a day, starting the next day, and he had cut his schedule down to 12 hours a day, being away from the house. Within 1 week. Later, he became a very popular speaker on Christian Science, going from where he couldn't even breathe to sharing his experience and enlightening, you know, the audience. I'm not sure whether I finished the three movies because I had an interruption or I had to stop the recording for an extended period. Anyway, the three movies are Remember Your Goal. That's about running, high school girls coach, teaching girls for long distance cross country. I think it's three and a half miles. And Pay It Forward and Stand and Deliver. Check them out. Do a search. Read about them. If they interest you, watch it. The Stand and Deliver has some foul language in the beginning, but it's minor compared to what you hear every day today. I mean, it's, you know, these movies are 20, 30 years old. So, you know, what was bad language there is below even being bad enough to be considered bad. But anyway, the other two are movies made by a company that had no profanity at all. But all three of them have very important messages. And I mentioned the three people that had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith, who healed a whole nursing home full of people with a contagious illness at one time in a few minutes. And Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead. And Frederick L. Rawson, they all had 15-minute appointments, so at the end of 15 minutes, their patient was healed. And the third one, Frederick Rawson, he understood how to overcome the belief of time. And he did 500 different healings where the people, he gave them the choice, I guess, and they said, yes, I'd love to have this go back and be healed right after I discovered it. And they didn't say this, but I imagine they probably forgot the entire experience of being ill. If you go back in time and erase it at the beginning, you wouldn't have any memory of it. He wrote a book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. It has 1,315 different examples of ailments and how to heal each one of them. And that's a book you don't want to read from beginning to end, because you only want to read what applies to your particular situation that you want to heal. Otherwise, you might as well go and take med school training and learn about all these diseases. You don't want to do that. You don't want to fill your thought. In fact, you want to clean your thought out. Our family was very fortunate because they had exemptions where you didn't have to take any of these classes. We had four in our family, and we all four had perfect attendance. All 12 years of school. They had not had one student that had a perfect attendance for all 12 years. Very few that had a perfect attendance for 1 year. And to have a whole family, four kids, that had perfect attendance for 12 years, they didn't know what to do about it. And I was very aggressive. I loved to go out and have fun. I had a motorcycle when I was 14 years old. I raced motorcycles, raced cars. Never an accident, never an injury. That was what was normal to our family. My dad was in a business that was a hazardous business. The insurance rates were very high for the men because it was a hazardous business. Never an accident. None of his men never had an accident. He never had an accident with any of his vehicles. Neither did I. It's an entirely different life. On the home page, we have a section there that you can read about what you can expect if you're a Christian Scientist and really study it. And what I've talked about in this treatment is called the system of divine metaphysics. Christian Science is like a generic term, but the system of divine metaphysics is exactly how you go about to being successful in healing. It's wonderful not to have to rely on other people for your well-being. Of course, I never have done it. That was not a part of our life at all at home. So I never knew anything different. But I know that it's very common for people to be uneasy because they've been a lot of failures about relying on other people. That's why alternative methods of healing have become so popular. They're not satisfied with what the drugs do. They're much more intelligent about having a balance in their diet, not just living on eggs, or not just living on one thing or two things, but having a balance. That's part of principle. Part of principle to have a balance in what you eat. It's part of principle to get some exercise. Don't just sit at the computer for 18 hours, and the only thing you get up for is to go eat or go to the restroom or quit for the day. You need to have a balance in everything you do, in the way you think. You need to have a structure. You need to make effective use of your time. Those kinds of things will help you go down the road. Mary Baker Eddy coined this phrase, infinite progression is concrete being. So if you want anything substantial, you have to make progress, step at a time, like the turtle. Turtle and the rabbit had a race. The rabbit took off like a bullet, a rocket. He immediately got tired and he laid down to sleep. In the meantime, the turtle walked right by and got to the finish line before he woke up. You want to be like the turtle. Steady progress. Steady progress. Remember Isaiah, about precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. That is the success. Not going backwards, but holding your ground and making progressive steps on a consistent basis. And you can do it. Because all faculty, all facility, all capability is from mind. And remember what Shakespeare said, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. We want to make sure the thinking that we put into our consciousness or reveal to ourselves is about perfection. Nothing less. Perfection. Mary Baker Eddy gave her most advanced students in her final class. She selected every single one that was going to be in that class. By the end of the third day, this is just the beginning of the class, she gave them an assignment to go out and perform a healing and come back and report on it the next day. They all did it. So from the end of the class one day to the beginning of the class the next day, they had to perform a healing. And every single one in the class had success. That was just the beginning of the class. Imagine what there was learned throughout. And the ones who completed the course were certified as a CSD, Doctorate of Christian Science. So she gave them seven prayers, one for each of the seven synonymous terms. And they're all called diapason of heaven. Diapason means compound concord. That's how we can make progress, by having compound concord. The topic of this prayer treatment has been truth, healing by reverse engineering. And of course, truth is the synonymous term for God that represents healing. So I will read to you the diapason of heaven with a focus on truth. And then I will say amen. And if there's any thought that occurs to me while I'm reciting that to you, that's no more than a couple of minutes. If it does, I don't know whether a thought will occur to me or not. Everything is extemporaneous. But if there is, then I will tell you, and then I will give you the date and the time, and repeat the title so you'll be fresh in your thought. And when I say the end, that means no more talking from me. So the end means that it is the finale. That's it. It's over. Okay. Here is the diapason of heaven with a focus on truth by Mary Baker Eddy, which ties in directly to our title, which is Truth, Healing by Reverse Engineering. Diapason of heaven by Mary Baker Eddy with a focus on truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the word of God. Amen. There is one thought occurred to me. I told you that Mary Baker Eddy indicated that we are barraged constantly with suggestions of mortal mind to get off track, and how important it is to have a model to refer to. Mary Baker Eddy took what Dr. Francis Fluno said about criticizing. Because if we love, which is the first step in healing, is to live a life of giving, then we can't criticize, because that's taking. That's trying to kill the true image of a human being, steal away his true identity, and assign him to be a sinner or sinful or an ill, sick, diseased individual. Something we're going to criticize him for. Maybe we don't think he was as smart as he should have been on a decision. Oh, yeah, here's something else I wanted to tell you. Because I mentioned about the president being criticized and big mistake that King David made about having that the husband of the beautiful woman being on the front line, so high possibility he was killed, and he was, and then he stole the wife. Evil operates where it tries to automatically disparage a character, and it makes up lies about people. Doesn't have to be the truth at all. As long as they can sway public opinion to think that the guy is bad, or woman, whoever it is, then that's what they try to do. Our job is the reverse of trying to find something evil about someone or to create a fabricated lie about him. So we don't really know whether the president did anything that he's accused of, because evil automatically does everything they can to defeat good. Mary Baker Eddy said that if we're a good Christian Scientist, we don't have time to be interfering in someone else's business. If we think someone has a problem, we need to fix our own thought about them. We need to do what Jesus did. Didn't matter what kind of a sin or sickness or even death, he saw them as God's child. And that's the way we need to see everyone, whether it's a friend or a foe, whether it's someone that we think is making a big mistake in how they're running things or not. Our job is to keep our consciousness clean. And she devoted time every single waking hour of her day, and we have this on the website, on the homepage, every single hour, and she probably was up 20 hours a day, every single hour she devoted some time, could have been 1 or 2 minutes, I don't know, to making sure that her thought was only looking for and focusing on the good about everyone and everything. In other words, she was training her thought to automatically do the reverse of what evil tries to do. If everyone did that, how do you think that would affect the world? Think about it. Think about it. We are one raindrop. Are we going to not do it because one raindrop we don't think is enough? One raindrop is the beginning of a steady rain. Falling on the parched earth of a desert. Are we going to be that one drop to start it? Are we going to refuse to talk about evil and support good? We have a special section on the website that we just started about good deeds that people have done. That's what we need to do. Mary Baker Eddy says the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. That's the thought that came to me. In the year of 2026, it is 2021 in the evening on Wednesday, March 19. And the title to this extemporaneous prayer treatment is Truth, Healing by Reverse Engineering. Thank you for listening. The end.